You're listening to The New Paris. I'm your host, Lindsay Tremuda. Paris has a long legacy, not merely as a world capital of culture, but as a literary capital. Some of the world's greatest writers and thinkers have created some of their best work in or about Paris. And not only that, they found homes for it in bookstores. And not only bookstores, but libraries. Aside from research-focused institutions, there's only one library in the city that we can all summon to mind, and that's the American Library in Paris. 2 years ago, I interviewed the best-selling author Janet Skeslian-Charles on this show about her novel, The Paris Library. But today, I'm excited to be joined by the executive director of the American Library, Audrey Chapuis, someone I've had the great pleasure of collaborating with over the years as I've spoken at the library about my own work and moderated discussions for other authors. This fall, we were among the inaugural speakers at the Angers English Language Literary Festival, and Audrey spoke at length about the role that libraries play in the world and the role that this library has played since 1920, and not only for Americans. In this conversation, we talk about her library path, bookish culture in Paris, and why visitors to the city should consider the library's evenings with an author an essential part of their itinerary. Audrey, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You and I spent some time at the Angers Literary Festival together, and you know, I got to hear you, I heard you speak, and I got to hear about sort of how you found your way into the world of libraries as a career, but I didn't really get a sense of how you became interested in pursuing library science from the beginning. What was that like a long childhood dream? How did you fall into that? Like, how did the real vision of your future begin?
So I've always been book obsessed, radically book obsessed. No one could understand where it came from. From an acquisitive point of view, like of the object, I wanted more books. And of course, the storytelling aspect. So I would have self-portraits of myself at five with me and a bookshelf. So the destiny had been written. And I remember, and I tried to get a job at a bookstore when I was like 14 or 15, even before you're legally allowed to work.
Right.
Because I just needed to be close to books. So I remember the day that I heard you could get a master's in library and information science. And it was like, you know, the light bulb went off and I said, this is where I'm meant to be.
And you grew up in Texas.
Austin, Texas, and which has great libraries. And I would spend time in the History Society and archives there. So the aesthetic appeal of archives really appealed to me as well. So, you know, from an institutional perspective, I loved it. From a mission perspective, I loved it. And even in library school, I loved every aspect of it. So my favorite class was indexing and abstracting, which probably sounds like one of the most boring subjects you could possibly pursue, but it was a blast. I love shelf reading, shelving, reference, cataloging, fundraising, and library advocacy. You know, every facet of library science speaks to me in some way.
So no one in your family was in this world?
Absolutely not. No, not in the literary world, publishing world. Who knows what inputs, started that intrinsic motivation.
Were your parents big readers?
My mom was. And I think I don't know if you've ever read Proust and the Squid. It came out 20 years ago or so, but it's about the reading brain. And one of the most important aspects of literacy is actually being read to. It's not learning to read. It's all of the creature comforts and experiences around being read to when you're a child, that feeling of safety and being transported with someone who loves you. Those are priceless.
Well, that would explain why I probably gravitated toward books then.
Anna, good.
Yeah, yeah. No, all the evenings reading, even R.L. Stein, you know, like
yes.
Doing all the voices and going through chapter by chapter with my parents, my dad mostly. But wow, okay, that's an interesting insight, actually, that's more sort of determining than as a, you know, for a young mind.
We hear from a lot of parents at the library about, some anxiety about raising bilingual children and what's the best method to inculcate a love of reading and pushing literacy. And I just tell them, read to them in both languages, read yourself, you know, model reading, create a family reading space in the home. Those, it speaks much louder than any concerted effort to teach reading.
Wow. No, that's fascinating. I don't think I realized how important that was. And then how did you land in Paris? Like, was the city's historic literary leanings part of the appeal to eventually make your way here?
Definitely. In high school, I read Henry Miller and Anais Nin and Juno Barnes and Baldwin and Wright. And I was also totally obsessed with this idea of a literary community. Mm. At least my experience growing up in Texas, that wasn't available to me.
Right.
And so I just thought, what a dream to be surrounded by writers and artists and have a specific place that embodies this curiosity and search and the artistic enterprise. So I idealized Paris as a place, as many of us do.
Right.
I also had some totally random francophilia that no one knows where that came from. I would listen to tapes of French. Again, in Texas, it was an interesting...
very niche interest, right?
Absolutely. But my husband is French.
Right.
So the francophilia preceded him, but that's not why I married him.
Right.
And we met in Chicago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
okay.
We met in Chicago. He was there for work. So we spent a decade in Chicago, then moved to London, and then to Paris.
And so up until... I wanted to ask you, because... You mentioned, you know, sort of how you grew up with libraries in Texas, and I did in the sort of suburbs of Philadelphia. And up until joining the library in Paris, my image of libraries was kind of stuck in like the late 80s, 1990s, because, you know, I left obviously when I was a college student. So, you know, maybe the other, when I came to Paris, I mean, so like maybe the last image was sort of like of a college library, right? Which is very different. How are American libraries different from French libraries? Because this is something you touched on when you spoke at the Angers Literary Festival, and I found it so fascinating, because I don't think I fully realized the sort of purpose that American libraries serve.
Yes. So I would say the biggest difference is in the funding model, right? That's the primary distinction, where in the U.S., libraries, first of all, they have to fight for funding a lot more than they do in France. And of course, you can see very well-resourced libraries in communities that really believe in the mission and purpose of libraries, and they're doing really innovative work. Then you see other communities that are, their libraries are essentially starved for funding. But I would say globally, libraries in the U.S. have had to kind of vacuum up these other social purposes, that in France, there's enough funding where other institutions and social enterprises are charged with those missions. On the positive side, that shows that in the U.S., there's still a lot of trust in libraries and librarians. So we've had a social mission, so that some institutions that might operate independently in France are part of the library.
For example?
So for people who are unhoused in the U.S., they might, their first point of entry to social services is the library. So you might have somebody, a city official, who's working on these issues, working within the library.
Huh.
There's even, you know, we have to do a lot with voting advocacy, you know, even election organization, these kind of civic duties that we're educating the populace. In many communities, the library is really the only point of entry, and maybe the most trusted point of entry.
Same thing for using computers, right?
Like, absolutely, yes.
Computer digital literacy. I think you said also you could like register to vote at the library.
Absolutely, yeah. So we're jacks of all trades in the U.S., which means that we might not be able to do some more that we'd like to do in our traditional function about promoting literacy. And I think they continue to be extremely innovative, especially in public humanities and access to information. But because we have this very capacious mandate in the U.S., it could just be a real challenge to do everything we want to do with limited funding.
And does that mean that book lending is less of the focus?
It's become so, and I would say that's how we differ greatly. Our circulation statistics for print books continues to rise.
At the American
Library. At the American Library in Paris.
Okay.
Yeah, we're a book-loving bunch. And again, these statistics vary widely by community and state. But in general, I would say library use is actually up. programmatic attendance is up. The people holding library cards
here.
Is up. In the U.S.
Oh, in the U.S., okay.
But book circulation on the whole is going down with people opting more for digital access. So they have great platforms for electronic magazines, ebooks, of course, research resources of all types, and that's skyrocketing, and so is demand. But I would say electronic resources, from a funding perspective, they're so expensive.
Mm.
So even in university libraries, for example, our budgets aren't really changing. But the demand is growing, and the need for adapting to these changing information appetites. You know, we've got to keep up the pace, so it's a real challenge. I mean, it comes down to funding again and again.
That's really always a sad state when, you know, these sort of beloved institutions can't, you know, are just constantly struggling. But that's true in so many areas.
Absolutely.
How do members at the American Library make use of the space? Because, you know, you just mentioned that it sort of stands apart from the way they're working in America, but also stand apart from the way French libraries are used, which I guess is what, purely research?
Yes, although French libraries, I would say they're very strong in multimedia. They've got access to great, you know, you've got audio collections and film collections. They even have artotechs where you can take out paintings to hang in your home.
What?
So there's some really cool stuff happening in French libraries, too. They're bustling. Whenever I go to a French library, I'm always struck by, you know, how much activity there is. They do less cultural programming, I would say, than we do, for example, because there's so much else going on in museums.
Sure.
And in fact, we had the president of the Bibliothèque Nationale at the library to talk about some of their innovations. And she made a fascinating distinction, which is French people tend to be more attached to their museums than their libraries.
Mm.
Whereas Americans have this deep affiliation for our libraries and the mission and the idea of having an educated populace and kind of giving people tools to fulfill their own educational imperatives. And so that's changing. French people are becoming more attached to their libraries. So back to our library, we're very much in the model of a public library, meaning we've got a huge collection that you can check out. We have electronic resources, but we are also very much a cultural center.
Yeah.
So we do hundreds of programs a year for readers of all ages. So I like to think of the kind of Platonic week at the library and how if you had all the time in the world, how you would use the library. So you would go to 2 to 3 author talks in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
You would attend Critical Conversations, which is a series of programming that's all about informed debate on a given topic. You take your kids to Story Hour.
Mm-hmm.
You'd let your teenager come to a book event. You'd check out some of our 90 periodicals. You'd meet fellow bibliophiles in a book group, and you'd come and read in a comfortable couch or in a silent reading room. So if you had a lot of time to spend, you really could easily spend every day at the library and still mm-hmm. find something new.
Yeah, I'm really envious of anybody who lives on the western side of Paris because, you know, like I would probably do some of like all of my work there if I didn't have to like lug my computer. But I love it. And I'm, you know, I think part of the strength of the institution has been those author events, and which we'll get to. But you mentioned briefly the big collection of books that you have available. How many are there?
100,000.
I mean,
so
that's massive.
It's massive. And now we're the largest English language lending library on the European continent.
Wow.
So it's interesting because it's become a library of record. That wasn't initially its aim, but a lot of these materials you simply can't get elsewhere. So thinking of it from a preservation standpoint, you know, it's something that we have to consider for the future.
And does the U.S., I mean, is there any funding that comes from, it's all private funding?
It's all private funding. We do have a lot of generous grants for projects. So mm-hmm. we just did a big outreach program that was funded by the U.S. Embassy, for example. But
yes.
As far as regular operational income, it's all, so only a quarter of our costs are covered by membership, it's a very modest monthly sum. And then it's private donations. So fundraising is absolutely crucial and has been from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Like without individual donors at all level of giving, like French school teachers give, business tycoons give because
wow.
they believe in it. And in many ways, it keeps us, I think, even more vibrant because we have to serve our immediate public in a very compelling and robust way and keep up with their changing appetites. And it really is a community library built for and by its community.
So that's what it, I mean, that's how it operates today. If we go back to the beginning just for a minute, you know, 1920, what are some of the elements of its history that you think deserve or should be better known? I mean, we know I had Janet Skesley and Charles on when her book, The Paris Library, came out. And we talked about the history that she tapped into with that novel. You know, so the role during the war, continuing to lend even through wartime, a refuge for people. What other parts of its history do you think are sort of the most astounding to you?
There's so much, and actually there's a lot of research to be done, and we're making discoveries pretty much every week. We do a history tour that's put on by a history docent. So she's deep in the archives with our other librarians and looking through our institutional archives and really finding out some fascinating stories about the librarians who worked there. And what I've been compelled by is some of our earliest leaders and why they were motivated to start and fund and continue this library. And it had a deliberate peacekeeping aim. And it's remarkable. You go back to these director's reports or president of the board reports, and they had a fiery reason to uphold these democratic values. And, you know, imagine you're just coming out of World War I. The world is absolutely devastated. And they felt that the library could make a big difference in multicultural understanding. Hmm. And that having a library that represented another culture, it would have an ambassadorial role, especially if it was a place that was entirely welcoming, and it could be a model for other libraries of that type. So I would love to spend more time getting to know these figures who, they were visionaries, they were so progressive, they had partnerships with really amazing organizations at the time that were just starting out, like the NAACP for creating specialized collections. So there's work to be done. Sarah Giorgini is an historian. She's at the Massachusetts Historical Society, and she's deep in John Adams' papers. I think that's her specialty. But she's writing a scholarly work about the library.
Wow.
And I think we're going to find some very juicy details about these hero librarians. And I think that's coming out by Oxford University Press in 2025.
I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
There's, you know, that's the one thing I think some people say, oh, so is this just for Americans, this library? But in fact, you know, from the beginning, which is what comes through in Janet's novel also, is just how European it was too. I mean, yes, there were obviously Americans, and there's been a long legacy of Americans living in Paris or passing through or whatever. But to this day, you know, every time I've given a talk at the library, the audience is sort of littered with people from all backgrounds who are there. So yes, many Americans, but really not exclusively. What is that breakdown today?
So for membership, we're about 50% American, or those who hold American passports. Many of them also hold nationality from a different country, 22% French, and the rest from 100 different countries.
Wow.
So extremely diverse. And even beyond nationality, we're becoming even more multi-generational. We're reaching new communities through different partnerships. And each event, I'm struck, you know, we do two or three every week, and it's a new crowd every time. And that social element is so important because these are all, they're like-minded people from all over the world. They're all curious, inquisitive, open, receptive. They want to be confronted with different ideas. And to have a multicultural perspective in a single room, it's extraordinary.
Who are some of the authors or big thinkers who have come through in, like, I don't know, in the recent years that you think have just totally captured the audience?
Oh, well, the one that stands out for me, and I'm getting chills just thinking of it, was Viet Thanh Nguyen.
Oh,
he
yes.
came, he was extraordinary. So he gave a talk. He was very moved. And I think it's on YouTube because all
yeah,
of our,
you highlight all the, or you capture that on
yes.
YouTube. Yeah.
So, but what was even more remarkable was after his talk, we had a reception in his honor. But instead, so he sat without touching his drink or food, and he just listened to people. And there were so many stories that people wanted to share with him. They opened up their own emotional floodgates. And so there were family stories, relationship stories, and he was just a conduit for them, just listening. So to create that space for people, it was remarkable. So he stood out, Hala Alian, she's a poet. She captured the room. The way that she delivers her poetry is incantatory, and she's just a very charismatic figure. She was one of our visiting fellows as well.
Right.
Ta-Nehisi Coates came, you know, obviously.
But you also get French voices as well who can,
yes,
you know, lead the room in English. Although I did moderate a talk that was in French, but it's true that most of them are, the majority are in English.
Yes.
Has Leila Slimani come to speak at the library?
She's at the top of my list. I know. Okay. She's so busy.
We got in touch
with her publisher, and they're like, you know, good luck.
Give her,
maybe in 3 years. But no, we have some great French thinkers, and you've done panels with your fellow podcasters. So recently we had Grace Lee back.
Oh, she's great.
She's so great. And she was in conversation with Kirsten Chin on her novel Counterfeit. And again, that multicultural perspective was so interesting. And I think that's one of my favorite recent talks. So catch it on YouTube.
No, that's great that you're also continuing to document for those who can't join, and you have the hybrid option where people can connect via Zoom, which honestly has just gotten more and more sophisticated, obviously, since you were forced to do it during COVID, right? You kept doing these talks, which was amazing. You know, you really adapted. We're also, you know, what we're seeing now in the world, not particularly in France, but elsewhere, are the banning of books as a way to, you know, control what stories and histories people have access to. And I think that's a very scary proposition. How hopeful do you feel as someone who loves libraries and is a champion of libraries, you know, wherever they may be, where this may or, you know, or could potentially happen? How hopeful do you feel that they could remain a refuge for truth seekers and also continue to be a resource, as you described, where other institutions, particularly in America, may fall short?
So I'm an optimist, so I'm quite hopeful, and yet I remain heartbroken that we have to have this fight right now. With the limited resources that we have, we want to just be in service. That's why we're all in this profession, to serve people. So it's diverting our attention to a fight. And we're prepared to fight. We're prepared to defend this proposition, and I think we're going to get better and better at advocacy, and I think our communities will as well. So we're stewards, and we have a message to pass, but every reader and every library goer can also pass that same message and uphold these values. And I think for many of us, we've taken it for granted, maybe not those of us who have been seeking funding for it, but I think people who might have just casually used the library or didn't but like the fact of having a library available for all, that feels in jeopardy. I think it will mobilize people in a very new way. Mm-hmm. It'll bring us together. It might even help us create more support later on. But I can't stress how important it is, and how quickly support can be pulled. So thankfully, we have organizations like the American Library Association who, you know, for decades, they've been honing the tools to take this fight to Washington, to have the right lobbyists and thinkers and advocates to protect us as much as possible. But I would, at this point, the grassroots on the ground users have to really come together to fight and uphold our libraries and our collections.
I mean, it is so terrifying. I mean, this isn't the first time we felt like we're moving back in time, and not in a good way. But this is like a particularly terrifying idea, because already we see the information war and how that plays out in wartime, in other sorts of political conflicts, you know, and if there's not a way beyond the internet to access information, I mean, we're really in a very difficult spot. Are there other libraries in the world that you particularly love? I mean, I know the New York Public Library is obviously beautiful. You know, I've never been there with enough time on my hands to like actually sit and read and use it. But as a structure, it's really, you know, exceptional. Are there places when you travel in the world where you're like, I just need to stop into this library?
I'm definitely a library tourist, and there are amazing libraries all over the world, especially in Europe. But I've been particularly fascinated by French libraries because we did this outreach program on the road.
Right.
So we went to 11 different cities to do essentially a pop-up American library, but throughout the north of France. So to really spend time with the librarians there, and France is a reader's country, in part because their collections are so rich. So, you know, we just scratched the surface, but places like Nantes, Amiens, Saint-Omer, they have these treasures. So in Amiens, I got to hold in my hands Jules Verne travel journals.
The originals.
The originals. And in Saint-Omer, they have a first folio of Shakespeare. They have Spenser's Fairy Queen. And it's funny, I helped with the Google Books project at Northwestern, and they were the same team that helped with the Bibliothèque Nationale digitization project. And they said, you can't imagine what is available in just on their regular stacks, where we would have in a climate-controlled vault and no one could touch them for centuries. But there's just an embarrassment of riches in France.
Old country, right?
Old country, absolutely. And they've taken good care. You know, I think the Bibliothèque Nationale, even today, what they're collecting, you know, we're legally required to submit our publications to the BNF. So I feel very good about the repository function of libraries, at least in this country.
What does that mean?
It means they're keeping track of everything. So even
meaning whatever new books you take into the collection, you have to sort of report it to them?
So not the books, but our own publications. Our newsletter. Okay. And there are even some efforts to capture ephemera, like posters about author talks.
Wow.
So yeah, they're on the cutting edge of that. Again, it's a matter of space and time.
Sure.
But the literary patrimoine is in good hands.
It's valued, yeah. And also the BNF Richelieu finished all of their construction. It's absolutely spectacular. Interestingly, the part that was finished initially, that reading room, you can no longer sort of access as just sort of a voyeur. But the other side, Rue Vivienne, you can go look and you can sort of walk in without being a sort of member. And the reading room is spectacular. I mean, it's obviously a much different space, much different group of people, different use. But just to know that it's still heavily used, I think, is kind of very reassuring. Much like I believe in other parts of Europe, they are. And I've seen also, again, Instagram is terrible for a lot of things, but it's good for creating a sort of desire where you didn't know there could be one. And that's highlighting some of these incredible bookstores and libraries in Asia. Like Seoul apparently has this like extraordinary architectural looking library that is, you know, that ends up getting shared and people want to go see it, you know. And I think creating that desire is also important, especially for young people. In the moments when you're not working, what bookish spots in Paris do you like to visit and would you recommend to visitors?
So I do work a lot. I don't have a lot of free time, but on the occasional Saturday, I love to go to bookstores. So Galignani is my favorite.
Me too.
It is so magical, especially for an American. I think it feels very old world.
Yes.
You know, the shelves are wooden. And at this time of year, they have this spectacular scent. I don't know where they get it, but it smells like pine. And you're just enveloped by this particular atmosphere that's magic. But there's a lot of independent bookstores and Anglophone bookstores in Paris.
Yep.
So I say visit them all. I also like, so not so much bookish spots, but I love the art supply stores in Paris.
Well, because you have that secret or not so secret talent. And I'm going to just tell people, when we were at the literary festival, she was taking notes on everyone's talks, but not taking notes so much as putting together an illustrated sort of document. How would you describe what you did? I mean, you were sketching.
Yeah, live sketching. And we're actually encouraging people to come to our author events to sketch or knit, or like if you have a handheld hobby, to come to the library and indulge your hobby as you're listening. So we have Maria Krasinski. She's an artist and she comes and sketches while she's there. So Sennelier has an amazing collection.
Oh.
But yeah, it's a memory tool. So I love drawing, but anybody can use it for retention. a lot of people like to do something with their hands while they're listening. And so that's something I do. But I think my next goal when I have a bit of time is to write a book that's almost like a graphic novel for adults about cultural management based in Paris. So that's the next little project.
We'll given see. What I saw after the literary festival, I think you have a really clear talent that needs to be more broadly known.
Thanks.
And my last question for you today, because you know this is we're in December, people are buying books also for the holidays or giving hopefully library memberships as we're making donations for the end of the year. What book that you've read in the last year has really stood out for you?
There's so many, and that's such a hard question
for
a librarian. But I will give a shout out to Catherine Chen's novel about Joan of Arc. So it won our book prize. So we honor a distinguished book written about France or the French, originally published in English.
Mm-hmm.
And Catherine Chen, I think, so she's written two books. I think she's going places. The book is such a rich retelling. She's gorgeous with characterization and scene setting, and I think it appeals to everyone. And she kind of, you know, Joan of Arc has been a figure that's been appropriated by a lot of different communities, and I think she's created a Joan she's complex and she's for everyone. So that I highly, highly recommend. It would be a very good gift. And then one more that was also on the list for the book prize. I'm cheating on the question, but
fine.
I loved there's a book about Marquis de Sade and by Joel Werner, but it's a literary caper above all. So
it's fictional.
It's nonfiction.
No. Okay.
But he weaves these different stories together. So it's about the Marquis de Sade, but also about a particular manuscript and the life of this manuscript that was hidden and then recovered and then stolen. So it's a romp. So that's fun.
Oh, fascinating. Well, and by extension, if anyone hasn't seen the film Quills, I don't know if you remember that film.
Yes, Jeffrey Rush, right?
Yeah, Jeffrey Rush and Kate Winslet and Joaquin Phoenix. Wow. If you like, if you're sort of intrigued by the Marquis de Sade story,
yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Intense.
But all of this can be found at the library, obviously. And people, when they're visiting Paris, can come to the library for author events. That's open to the public. And I highly recommend they plan to do so when they're here in 2024. Audrey, thank you for taking the time out of your schedule. The library is such an important place, and I think we need to do everything we can to keep it alive and thriving.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. And thank you for doing all of the work that you do for the library. You're one of our MVPs. And every time you speak at the library, you bring a wonderful crowd. And so I know many of your listeners would love to see you in person at the library. So thank you for being a regular.
Then I guess we just need to find another moment next year. But yes, honestly, the author events are so special. Make a point of coming. Audrey, thanks for everything you're doing.
Thanks, Lindsay.
Thanks for listening to the New Paris Podcast. If you enjoy the show, it would mean the world if you would rate and leave a review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, à bientôt.